Well, hey, if you have a Bible with you and it's beneficial for you to follow along, I'll be in Ecclesiastes chapter 1 in those first 15 verses. During the series, there'll be longer texts, as you noticed, and so won't necessarily be able to get through every single detail, but if it's helpful for you, that's where I'll be. And Ecclesiastes is in about in the middle of the book that we have here, the Bible, and it's right after the book of Proverbs, all right? So we'll be in Ecclesiastes. Well, it's the new year, brothers and sisters, and the saying that we hear so often is this: new year, new me. New year, new me. And here's what I find so many times when there's a new year, all right? So, I don't know how many people are into social media or not. If you're not, that's probably a good thing. I don't know. But I get on social media sometimes, on Facebook in particular, and what I find every new year is this: people curse the year that came before, and they latch on to this new year thinking, this is going to be the year for me. This is going to be the year I'm going to put my hope in. It's a new year and a new me. I can remake myself. I know horrible things happened last year. I know last year wasn't too great, but this is the year for me. And they just vehemently, even sometimes graphically and vulgarly, curse the year before it, and they look towards the new year for hope. And here's the problem with that. That same person, a year ago, was blessing the year that they're now cursing. And they do this year after year after year. Every year they see that it's devoid of meaning. Each year that they see that these bad things going on in the world, these evil things going on in the world, indeed their own hearts and souls, and year after year after year, they keep having the same discussion and the same conclusion, that they just look to the new year, everything will be okay, and we can curse the old one and leave it behind. And so it goes with so many things under the sun. As we begin the series Ecclesiastes, we're going to call this series Grasping at Straws. So that idea is that as we are trying to grasp onto meaning, it's like grasping onto straws. We're trying to make sense of the world. We're trying to find our place in the world. We're trying to make sense of it. And it's like grasping onto straws. It's just about impossible. And as we begin Ecclesiastes, we look to the answers of such questions. How are we to make sense of the world? How are we to make meaning of what we see out in the world, the brokenness? Because I think if you're really honest with yourself, each and every one of you, whether you're listening to me on Zoom or listening to me on the recording or if you're here, if you're honest with yourself, you would acknowledge that there's evil and brokenness in the world. There's no denying that. No denying that bad things happen. No denying that there's death in the world. No denying that there's injustice. And so we sit here with the book of Ecclesiastes, and we look to the answers of such hard questions of how to make meaning and find our place in the world. We consider how meaning can be realized in our own lives, and as a people of God, we also consider how to point people to ultimate meaning outside of this place. In the book of Ecclesiastes, just a brief amount of background here. In the book of Ecclesiastes, we are introduced to Koheleth. Koheleth in the Hebrew means, and the best way to go to our English is teacher or preacher. And so you'll see here in verse 1, my translation says, the words of the preacher, the son of David, king of Jerusalem. So I won't really say Koheleth anymore. I'll refer to the teacher as preacher. But Koheleth means teacher, preacher. And Koheleth could be King Solomon, that's what many people think, even though Solomon's not explicitly in here. Some people think it's a type of Solomon. I tend to believe that King Solomon authored this, but that's neither here or there. I'm not going to dwell on that too much. But the deal is, either way, the preacher is trying to investigate meaning under the sun. He's trying to look out to that which he sees outside, like, how do I make meaning of this? How do I make sense of it? What is meaning under the sun? And so, how will we go about making meaning in our lives, brothers and sisters? How will we go about making meaning of this world? Because I tell you the truth, it is a question each and every one of you listening is faced with. Did you know that? There's no neutrality in this. You can't just sit back and not deal with these things. Because it says here in Romans 6:23, here's the deal. Here's the deal. Romans 6:23 says this, for the wages of sin is death, but the free gift of God is eternal life in Christ Jesus our Lord. This question of meaning and ultimate reality, there's no neutrality. You have to consider the things of Christ. You have to consider the things of eternity. You have to consider the things of death. You have to consider that there's evil outside. You have to consider that there's brokenness outside. We must come to terms with that. And so many people try to be neutral in this thing, but no, you're either for God in Christ or you're against God apart from Christ, right? So this is something we have to think about, even though it's a harsh reality. And here's the deal. We kind of have a weird way of answering these questions, how to make meaning and make sense of the world. And here's what happens so many times. We look away from God. We look away to ultimate authority. We look away to ultimate reality. And we like to think of ourselves as what I'm going to say, little g gods. We like to think of ourselves as gods who are just full of meaning by themselves. We're full of solutions by ourselves. We're full of power by ourselves. We can make meaning of death. We can make meaning of evil. We can make meaning of brokenness. We think this so often. But here's the deal. The end of this is a mean, harsh reality. If we insist on looking to ourselves for the answers, if we insist on looking to ourselves to make meaning of a broken world, if we insist on that, it becomes devoid of meaning. That's what this text will unpack today. And so if we're going to have any meaning in our lives at all, if we're going to point people to any meaning in their lives at all, then one who truly matters must break in. And as we see today here at Grandview Covenant Church, as Jesus Christ. And so to ponder the harsh reality, how to read to go about it, I want to ask two questions today. The significance, quote unquote, that we strive for does not matter. So why hold on to it? The significance that he brings matters, so why neglect it any longer? Let's park here for a second. The significance, quote unquote, that we strive for does not matter, so why hold on to it? And here's what we're going to see as we dive into this poem here. So the first 11 verses here is poetic, and here's what we're going to see. We're going to see that what's written here is not Caleb Christianity. I'm not bashing on Caleb, I'm not bashing on that sort of thing, but we don't have roses and sunshine and cutesy-tootsy Christianity here in the first 11 verses. That's not what we see here. We actually see something that on the surface, it looks pretty hopeless. We see something on the surface that looks pretty devoid of meaning. And as Christians, or as people outside the church, Ecclesiastes is oftentimes a book that people do not like to touch with a 10-foot pole, because few verses. In my translation, it says vanity of vanities. You might have meaningless, whatever. Yet people don't like to hear that. Even in the church, people don't like to hear that. It's a hard reality. It's a harsh reality to face. But as we're going to see, and it's an important one to face, all right? And so, brothers and sisters, let's look into this poem here real quick, and let's just see what happens here. Let's see that there is a claim here, and here is the claim. The writer, the preacher, is saying, everything under the sun is vanity, and it's impossible to take hold of. So vanity, or meaninglessness, whatever your translation has, that in the Hebrew means hevel, so that means a smoke or a vapor. So here's what he's trying to say. He says, smoke, smoke, everything around you is smoke. When you try to grab on to something for meaning, whether it be good things like family, children, career, your own success, your own morality, whatever it might be, Solomon's going to cover your own wisdom, like your own ability to problem solve, your own ability to have wives, whatever it might be, if it's apart from God, it is vapor. So when you're trying to grab onto it, you might see it. You see it, right? It's smoke. But when you try to grab onto it for ultimate meaning, when you grab onto it, it's going to slip right through your fingers, and it's going to blow away just like that. People don't like to hear that. People try to live in some sort of reality where that's not true. But I think if you're really honest with yourself, if you've been trying to grab onto that which is not of God, you can realize that there's this burning and emptiness in your soul, and you know that what you're trying to grab onto is vapor, and you're just not being honest with that reality. And that's the claim here, brothers and sisters. Verse 2 and 3, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Emptiness, emptiness, everything is empty. Meaningless, meaningless, everything is meaningless. What does man gain by the toil? What does he gain under the sun? See, when it's focused on man and his toil, even if it's hard toil, I'm not saying hard work's a bad thing, but apart from God, no matter how hard you work, it's just going to be smoke that you're trying to hold on to. So that's the claim here. And now I know what some of you may be thinking here, whether you're listening or whether you're here today. I know what some of you might be thinking or could be thinking. You might be thinking, how could this be? How dare you say that the things I'm striving for is meaningless? How dare you say that the things I'm trying to go for is vanity upon vanities? How dare you say, outside of the world, you look out there and say, meaningless, meaningless, and it's just smoke that you're trying to hold on to? Isn't this an exclusive claim? Because what the writer here is saying, apart from God, that's it, precisely what goes on out there. Even if you're thinking that, if you're thinking, how can this be? How can this be? How can this be? And I wanted to show you what happens here in the text. And here's what happens. The things that we observe are going around and around and around. They're going, but with no aim. We look outside, things are going, things are happening, things can even happen in our own lives. But we find oftentimes it is going without any aim. I want to show you this in the text here. Verse 4, a generation comes and a generation goes, but the earth remains forever. What he's saying here, a generation, these kids come, they grow up and then die. These kids grow up and they come and then they die. And on and on and on it goes. And we can really put our faith in our forefathers before us, and that could be a good thing. Or we can put our faith in our children, and that can last for a while. But the reality is a generation comes and a generation goes. I loved my grandma Ferris, and I struggled when she was gone. That was a whole chunk of that family that's no longer there anymore. She had values, and she was of the builder generation, and I valued that builder generation. But just like that, after she was gone, any resemblance of the builder generation, my family's now passed away. Generation comes, a generation goes, but the earth remains forever. Verse 5, the sun rises and the sun goes down and hastens. So the sun goes up and the sun goes down. The sun goes up and the sun goes down. We don't always know why, but it does, and we wonder why. And the wind blows to the south and the wind goes to the north, and around it goes. The streams run to the sea, but the sea's never full. So you get what he's trying to say here? All these things happen outside of us, and it's without aim. So when the wind blows, why does it? We ask this question a lot here the couple months in the northern plains here when it's 70-mile-an-hour winds. Why is it blowing? Where is it blowing to? What's the purpose of this? And if in and of itself, there is no purpose. Why does the sun rise and why does the sun go down? In and of itself, there is no purpose. Going, and going aimlessly. We were looking at Christmas lights in Sioux Falls, and I'm pretty arrogant. I don't like using GPS at all. I like to say that I know the roads like the back of my hand. And so we were in a neighborhood. And I don't know if you've ever had this happen before, brothers and sisters. But I was going around and I really thought, I was like, okay, I know that landmark. I know that landmark. I'm getting out of here. And then like 10 minutes later, I'm back where I started. And so I said, oh, okay, I just made a wrong turn somewhere, so I'll try it again. And 10 minutes later, I'm back where I started. And I was even so arrogant to do it again. And so 10 minutes later, I'm back where I started again. And then finally I said, oh, could I use your GPS, Mariana? Man, such it is when we try to make meaning apart from God. We're going and going, and we really think we're going somewhere, but it doesn't have aim. We get back to where we started from. This. See, that's what he's trying to say here. We can go, the earth can go, but it goes right back to where it started, and that's sin and brokenness, brothers and sisters. And then we're stuck in that. We might feel like we're going, we might feel like we're trying to get out of that neighborhood, if you will, but then I just end up right at the same house in the same intersection that I was trying to get away from. And here's where we're going. It's not popular, but it gets worse than that. See, the bad news of this gospel we talk about is worse than just going around aimlessly in circles and circles apart from God in this life. See, full of weariness as we try to make sense of everything and go round and round, our end comes quickly and everything fades away. I'm not going to read all these verses to you, but Verse 8 says, all things are full of weariness and man cannot utter it. What he's trying to say is, everything goes round and round. Everything that I try to do seems to go round and round, and I always end up in the same place, and I'm full of weariness, and I can't even utter the weariness that's in my soul. I cannot even utter the pangs in my soul. I cannot even utter the brokenness and the terror that I experience in my soul. See, he's being honest with himself here and saying, man is full of weariness, and I can't even utter the weariness that I am trying. But he's writing about it here and doing quite a good job here through the inspiration of the Spirit. And here's what we see. Verse 11, there's no remembrance of former things, a latter things yet to be, nothing new under the sun, and nothing what has been done is new or novel. So here's what happens when we go round and round and round in circles. We think we might be doing a great thing that says, it says here, you know, we really get into inventions even in this day and age. We can be excited about the new phone that comes out or the new electric car that's coming out or the new invention. But what he's saying here is, it might seem new and novel, but he's really saying, you know what? You might think you're doing something great for humanity. You might think that there's this new great invention. But and the reality is, we still have the same problem of evil and still have the same problem of brokenness. And we're right back where we were. We thought we were going and going and going, but remember, we're going in circles. And so what's the end to all this? You might not see it in these verses, but Solomon later talks about righteousness and judgment. The end of all this, we go around and around in circles, we reject a good and holy God. He's been good to us, but we decide to go our own way, like I was in that neighborhood, and we go around and around and around in circles. It gets worse than that. Our end is that, verse 11, there's no remembrance of us. We're forgotten. We might be remembered for a while, but as the writer says, generation comes and generation goes, and our end is, you know, it's pretty empty here, and then in light of eternity, there's judgment apart from God. If we stand before a good and holy God, we will be judged for the things that we've done. We will be judged for the things that we have done as we've gone round and round in circles. And the judgment for this is eternal separation from God, where we, for eternity, go round and round and round in circles without any meaning at all. Wow. So are you still with me right now? It's not the most cheery message ever, but are you still with me if you're listening or here? It's not that God's gift to us in creation are bad. So before I go on, I want to make that clear. It's not that I'm saying that the sun rising and the sun goes down is an evil thing or that God's world is evil or anything that. But here's what I am saying. If we elevate those things above God, if we see him revealed in creation, if we see him revealed in the Bible, if we see him revealed through the will of Jesus Christ, and we still choose to set up the things of the world, then yeah, they're meaningless. They were supposed to point us to God. He made the sun to go up and down to point us to him. He made creation to point us to him. But a lot of times we just look to it. We worship it and we worship ourselves. And so as we go on here, there is hope in this text here. Point number two is, let me make this very clear, the significance we bring, and it's not popular to say these days, but the significance that we bring, apart from God, does not matter. It will be forgotten. One day, I will be in the grave if Jesus doesn't come back, and so will you. Generation will come and generation will go. It's a harsh reality. There's good news to that reality. Because number two is the significance that he brings truly matters. So the question I ask to you, if it truly matters, if you realize that in your own soul that there is not significance, if you're trying to grab on to things that are smoke and you just see it flying away out of your hands, why neglect it any longer? Why neglect God any longer? Why neglect Christ any longer? Because to see the significance that he brings, we must see that our attempts at significance for what they are, and it's vanity and striving after wind. The preacher says here, I the preacher have been king over Israel and Jerusalem. So hear me on this. The preacher has so many great things. He is king over Jerusalem. He has applied his heart to seek out knowledge. He has gotten all these riches. He has applied himself to many things. And here's what his conclusion is. He says, my goodness, what an unhappy business that God has given to the children to of man to be busy with, because I have seen that everything that is done under the sun is vanity and striving after wind. I have seen that everything that I have done that I thought would be good, I have seen that if I pursue my own wisdom, I have seen that if I pursue my own ways or my own pleasures, it is a vanity and an emptiness and a striving after wind. And I realize in the end is it is an unhappy business. There is not joy there. There is not meaning there. There is not completeness there. And so where we begin is this. Hey, let's be honest with ourselves. Our lives apart from Christ is this. Our attempts at significance are not there. It's a vanity, and it's a striving after wind. And we must see our attempts at significance as just that, all right? Let's be honest with ourselves, because if we live in denial, if we puff ourselves up to that which is not, if we deny the pangs in our soul that just cry, emptiness, emptiness, everything is emptiness, if we ignore that and keep going in our own ways and insist on going in circles, even though we know we are lost, that's not a place to begin. We must be honest, like I was that day, that I am lost. I need the GPS to get out of this neighborhood. And to see the significance that he brings, we must see that he's made the crooked straight. If you're following along with me, I point you to verse 15, or if you're listening, please hear this verse 15 here, because this is important. Because we have all this doom and gloom. We have all this, it's saying vanity of vanities, everything is vanity. And he's saying this is an unhappy business that God has given to man, and a generation comes and a generation goes, and the sun, and what are we to make of all this? And even there is no remembrance of former things that will someday be forgotten. This seems like doom and gloom. And I want you to hear this verse 15. He writes, what is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be counted. I want to ask you this, the crooked made straight, does that sound familiar to any of you? This language of what is crooked cannot be made straight, what is lacking can't be counted. So what he's trying to say is if it's crooked, it can't be made straight in our lives, and if we're trying to count something and it's not even on the table, like if I'm trying to count something here and there's nothing to count, I can't count anything. What is this business of the crooked being made straight? Does this sound familiar, brothers and sisters? Luke 3:5, which quotes Isaiah 40. Every valley shall be filled, and every mountain shall be made low, and the crooked shall become straight. This is what Jesus brings when he comes on the scene. This is what God through Jesus brings when he comes on the scene. We have a gracious God that when this was written, he saw the vanity of vanities and the emptiness upon emptiness. He could see in people's souls that, oh, it's just generation after generation, and they're trying to find their own way, and they're going around in circles. And he responds with grace. It's even in this text when he's writing, what is crooked cannot be made straight, and what's lacking can't be counted. John the Baptist comes on the scene, and here's the proclamation. When Jesus comes, the crooked shall become straight. The crooked shall become straight. There's hope in this text. And the hope comes through the gospel. What is crooked cannot be made straight, and what's lacking can't be counted. Well, how is the crooked going to ever be made straight and the evil ever made right? It's that God had to come. As we just got done celebrating Christmas, he had to come to be one of us. He had to come to grow up and fulfill the law, which these Israelites in the Old Testament failed at time and time again, following God's law. He had to come and be crucified on a cross to bear our sin and our iniquity, to deal with the wrath of God directed towards the sin, and to rise to be victorious over it. This is the gospel of Jesus Christ. This is how the crooked is made straight. This text is crying out that one needs to come to make the crooked straight. One needs to come so that we can actually have something to count here. One actually comes that actually needs to have substance so we can look to him and say, we're not trying to count something that's not there anymore, but we can look at an actual living God, and then we can know that he can be having substance in our lives because of the work that he has done for us on the cross. That is such good news. And to see the significance that he brings, we must see the things that can only matter through Jesus Christ. See, remember the things that I told you about that don't matter? Remember, as we went through this poem, that in and of themselves, a generation passes and generation comes and the sun goes up and we don't really know and it doesn't really seem to matter? Well, through Jesus, everything all of a sudden starts to matter. Through Jesus, the crooked all is the sun straight. Through Jesus, we all of a sudden have substance. Let's walk through this real quick. If Ecclesiastes 1:4, it says, a generation comes and a generation goes, and the earth remains forever. Well, through Jesus, though generations and family pass, though my grandmother is no longer here, she trusted in Jesus Christ for her salvation alone, and her last words were, Lord, help me. A generation comes and a generation goes, but Jesus makes us sons and daughters forever, so we no longer have to trust in the cycle of a generation coming and a generation going. Ecclesiastes 1:5, though the sun rise and fall, though the sun, it seems like the sun goes up quicker than ever and goes down quicker than ever the longer I'm alive. But here's the deal. It's promised that Jesus in the end will be our light forever. The sun will be no more than the Son of God will be our light. This is what it points to. And then all of a sudden, the sun matters. Ecclesiastes 1:6, though the wind blows aimlessly, as it says, though the winds blow to the south and they blow to the north, and here in South Dakota and Iowa and Minnesota and this tri-state area, the winds blow really hard. Man, we don't know where the wind's going. But here's the deal. Jesus provides the Spirit that blows, as John 3 says. It doesn't blow aimlessly, the Spirit of God. It blows to hearts who are ready to accept Him by grace through faith. The wind all of a sudden matters through Christ. Through the Spirit. Ecclesiastes 1:7, all streams run to the sea, but the sea is not full. See, Jesus provides living water, water. He provides the Spirit. And Ecclesiastes 1:9-10, though there is new, though there is old, though there is things that are forgotten, Jesus has done that which has never been done. Though we might think that, oh, I've done something that has never been done. I brought something to the world that has never been done, but then it's forgotten and then you're buried. Jesus has done something that will never be forgotten here. And that's the reason why 2,000 years later we are gathered here, because we will never forget the death and the burial and resurrection of Jesus Christ because of all that He has done. We will never forget His sacrifice. We will never forget how He took on our sin, and we will never forget that He is still alive. We will never forget that He is risen from the dead, and we will never forget that He is coming back once again. We will never forget that He has done a new thing, and it is still a new thing 2,000 years later, and we don't get tired of the new thing that He has done because it is so deep, and the meaning is so deep for us, and the implications are beyond grasp. You see what I'm saying here? You're tracking here. Things can truly matter with Jesus, brothers and sisters. Things can truly matter because He lived. Things can truly matter because that He died in our place. Things can truly matter because He is risen. Things can truly matter because He is seeking and saving that which is lost right now. Things can truly matter because His Spirit is with us. That is such good news. Though that which is under the sun can be a harsh reality, and though that you might identify with some of these pangs that we just talked about today. One who has matters has come, and that is good news. One who has come to make the crooked straight has come. We have this glorious gospel, and what's the end of the gospel, brothers and sisters? Is it going around in circles and having a horrible end and being doomed to eternity of going round and round in circles forever and ever? No, the end of the gospel is that this Jesus comes back and He establishes His rule and reign for all eternity, and we rule and reign with Him. That's the end of the gospel, and that truly matters. That truly matters. So we will never find significance and meaning on our own. We can find it in what God has done, though. Indeed, we can only find it in what God has done. It's exclusive. Here's what I'm saying, and it's unpopular, but it's the message that we need to receive this morning. It's the message that we need to go out into the world and receive. As Tim Keller famously puts it, the gospel is not good advice, it's good news. We have no novel advice, really, to solve this problem of aimlessness. We have no advice that can solve the problem of lost souls in the world, but the gospel can. That's what we go out with. And we can find it in God, and it's exclusive. meaning will not be found anywhere else. Anything else that you do apart from God ultimately will not matter. It is only through Jesus Christ, the one who truly matters, that things will matter in our own lives, in our community, and in our church. Man, you want your ministry to matter? Look to Jesus Christ. If you look away from Jesus, your ministry won't amount to anything. If I look away from Jesus and my preaching, if Jesus hasn't shown up today, this message doesn't mean anything. It doesn't matter. If Jesus doesn't blow in the wind of our sails as we go out in the community, and as we go out to tell people about Jesus and he's not in it, then that doesn't matter. If we try to look to career and we try to do all these moral things for humanity and we try to do all these political things and this, that, or the other thing, that won't matter apart from Jesus Christ. Why? Because he's the only one that can make the crooked straight. It says here, right here, the preacher is trying to make the crooked straight. He's trying to look to all these things, but he's saying, what is crooked can't be made straight. I don't even know what to count here as I look out. And so as it was asked in the beginning of the message, how will you make meaning in your life? Because you can't be neutral on this. There will be some way that you make meaning of life. It does not work to just say, well, I guess I won't make meaning of life and I'll just kind of float through. No, you will make meaning of life one way or another. And the offer on the table here is, it can either be through Jesus Christ, that one who has made the crooked straight, that one who has made everything matter, or we can be left to our own devices, and we could be going around in circles forever and ever, trying to find meaning, trying to grab onto smoke, which really isn't there. Brothers and sisters, as for you who are in Christ, go from this place knowing that, yeah, it is a harsh reality out there oftentimes. We can't deny that. This isn't a prosperity gospel where if you believe in Jesus, all your problems will just fade away and you'll just have blessing upon blessing. But you will have spiritual blessing upon spiritual blessing through Christ no matter what happens. You always have his love no matter what happens. You always have your salvation from sin no matter what happens. Hope can only be found in God. And the harsh reality does not need to be your reality. And the harsh reality doesn't need to be the reality of our community either. We can go out with the gospel of Jesus Christ. We can go out with this good news that we can trust that the gospel makes the crooked straight. Amen.